Hello, and welcome to another episode of Robbinsdale Revisited. Today, we have an interview between Robbinsdale resident Lou Ambrose and president of the Robbinsdale Historical Society, Pete Ritchie. Lou Ambrose lives in her grandfather's house on Crystal Lake, a home built in 1917 that's still filled with original furniture, family artifacts, and stories. Her grandfather, Thomas Herbert Girling, was born in 1865 and became one of Robbinsdale's most influential early residents, playing a key role in publishing, transportation, politics, and local development. In this episode, we talk about some of the homes that nearly everyone in Robbinsdale recognizes, like the Girling House on Crystal Lake, once a true lakeshore home, and the Ambrose family home along West Broadway. These houses aren't just landmarks. They tell the story of how the town grew and how families stayed rooted here for generations. Through Lou's family memories, we explore early bus routes, paved roads, changing shorelines, civic life, wartime experiences, and everyday moments that show what life in Robbinsdale was really like over the past century.
And I'm sitting here with Lou Ambrose.
Mary Louise Beatrice Ambrose.
Okay, very good.
But I go by Lou because there were too many Marys in my family.
I associate you and the homes you've lived in with the Girling and the Ambrose family. I keep running into these names over and over again, especially Thomas Girling, who just shows up at the very beginning of Robbinsdale history and is really the town's booster, starts this newspaper, Picturesque Robbinsdale, which we have bound copies of here in the Historical Society, is elected to Congress, starts a bus company. He appears over and over again, a giant in Robbinsdale history. I think he actually started second mayor.
Yeah. Missed it by one. It could have been Girlingsdale.
Yeah.
But it was Robbinsdale.
Village president.
Oh, right. Right. Village president.
Well, we call them mayors. And now that all makes sense. And then I also associate you and your family with these two homes that I've always known, and anybody who's lived in Robbinsdale, because they're just, they're prominent homes. They're the things we drive by all the time. We've got the Ambrose House, I believe, which is up on just above Guarantee State Bank, or it's not Guarantee State
West
Bank
Broadway,
anymore.
On West Broadway.
And then we have the Girling home down on Crystal Lake. Let's just maybe begin there. So Thomas Girling is your great-grandfather?
No, a grandfather.
He's your grandfather.
He was born in 1865, which just blows me away. He, you know, my mother was born late, and then I was born late. So that's explains the expansive years there. But he was born in England, in Nottingham, in 1865, and came to the U.S. when he was 6 months old. He didn't come into Robbinsdale, I don't think, until maybe the 1890s. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. He lived in two different houses in Robbinsdale. The first one is long gone, but it was on what they called Jefferson Highway, which was what turned into West Broadway. And it would be right where the parking lot is for Garrity Delmore. So he owned that. And he owned just a huge chunk of land because he owned where the Robinwood Apartments are, where Garrity Delmore is, all the way down to the lake. And so the first house was one on West on Jefferson Highway, and that's where the first Mrs. G lived. So he was married twice. The first time was to Edith Miller, and I guess the Millers were also a family in Robbinsdale. I don't know a lot about them because they're not really part of my family. Yeah, he was married to her, and then she had an appendicitis and died from that, but he had one child from that marriage. And then in 1917, they built the house down on the lake, and that's the one I live in now. And that's the one my mother, she wasn't born there, but she grew up there starting when she was about 3 years old.
Do we know when Thomas Girling married his second wife?
Yes, we do.
Your grandmother then?
Yes. The first marriage went from 1889 to 1906. And then he married my grandma, Mary Egan, in 1908. And she actually worked for him. She was like a secretary in his office because her father, Edward Egan, had been killed very early. He was building the Stone Arch Bridge, and he was a stonemason. And he was crushed, basically. And so her mother, my great-grandmother, had to make their living. And so the girls also went out and worked. So she unusually was a working woman in the early 1900s.
We know that, speaking of, you know, working for Thomas Girling, I know he was involved in publishing, transportation, Was it real estate?
He did some real estate, but I think there's a letter that he wrote from Colorado saying that, you know, he'd been doing real estate in Colorado, but he heard that Minnesota had some interesting areas. And so he thought he might relocate to Minnesota. So I think it was real estate maybe that originally brought him here. But I didn't hear a lot about it from my mom. So I don't think he continued in it that long.
Did his brother come over from England too?
Oh, yeah, the whole family. He had a number of brothers and sisters, but they didn't really, they mostly stayed in like the East, like Philadelphia and things. So I didn't have any, and of course they were a whole lot older. So I didn't have a lot of knowledge of that.
Some point, it seems like he refers to his brother as owning a bookstore or.
Could be. Could very well be.
Somebody else in the publishing business.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense.
Of course, the other thing that jumps up whenever I'm looking through things is this bus company.
Uh-huh.
And I think, I want to say 1904, which is really early when I think of, you know, motorized transportation
exactly. That
way. And I had read about this. Some of these buses were built by a local company named Wilcox that was here in the cities. And I know they went from downtown Minneapolis all the way to Anoka.
The West Hotel.
Yep. We have this sign in the Historical Society that says, to the West Hotel, 10 cents. And I was told that he hung that outside the hotel here in Robbinsdale, which was called either the Columbia or the Georgia Hotel. It was a three-story building about where the bakery isn't anymore.
Right. Okay. Because it's not the Robin Hotel. That's later.
Yeah.
Okay.
That one came later. And the seats for the buses are in your basement.
They're in my basement. And I have a new story about them because I had windows replaced in my basement recently. And so for the first time in possibly 80 or 90 years, I moved one of those things so that they could get to the windows. And those things are like cast iron and they're leather and then they're horsehair. And you can sit on those things, you know, and they don't budge. They don't break. They're very solid. I have two of them.
So when I looked at that, I thought this is like the basement rec room, right? And it was from the 1920s.
They had a pool table and a ping pong table down there. Mm-hmm. And it's a walkout basement to the lake. So, yeah, it was like paneled. And I'm sure they hung out and played down there. And of course, the lake was so much closer. Now, something I really wanted to mention is that the lake was probably, I don't know, well, you've seen it like 50 feet, 60 feet closer, because I have a picture of the house reflected in the lake. And then it receded, and you've covered this in one of your other podcasts about all the damage that was done to Crystal Lake. And the woods down there, even when I lived, I moved in the 79, there was much more wildlife, you know, and I had pheasants, I had fox, I had deer, you know, there was all kinds of stuff. And even recently, I've seen coyotes down there. So it's a whole different world than it was when it was built. Because then when it was built, it was a lakeshore home.
And of course, that would explain all those beautiful windows on the one side of the house. That
on the porch side, they would hang out there. I was just looking at an article about how my grandfather this was in 1917, right when the house was built. He was convalescing. He'd had some problem. He was sitting out on the porch. And my mother would tell the story too. And he saw a boat overturn in the lake. And there were two men in it. And they were drowning, according to the account. And my grandfather went down there and he saved their lives. And this made it into the paper.
Well, that just reminds me of, you know, I spend way too much time reading old newspapers. And one of the things I've come across a couple stories of heroism by the Girlings.
Oh, of course.
And one of them would be your grandmother, but it could be his first wife, too. She
buggy whip?
Right. She's attacked by bandits on the Robbinsdale Road. And she,
I love that story,
you know, gets the horse going and runs over one of them.
Yeah, exactly. I found that when I was doing some ancestry work, and I was just like, good on you, Mrs. G. But yeah, it was my his first wife, and she had her daughter with her, Amy, and that would have been my step aunt. So yeah, I thought, oh my God, in her buggy with a buggy whip. Good on her.
You don't mess with Mrs. Gurley.
No.
Oh, but she's not. I mean, this story came up a couple different times. Apparently, there were bandits on the way from Minneapolis to Robbinsdale.
There were bushes on both sides of the road, so there were places to hide.
There's also a terrible story about a woman who was attacked there who worked at the Robbins house, and that made front page.
Was she one of the help?
She was. And she was going back and forth to work and was attacked and dragged into the woods by this man. And Horrible story.
Terrible.
Just in case we think that terrible things didn't happen.
All right.
Then, you know.
No. That. Now, have you heard the story about the cow and the car?
No, you better tell me
okay.
that.
Okay. This one my mother loved to tell. My grandmother and my grandfather were driving. I think it was on Girard. They were driving along, and this, she said it was a bull. I'm not positive it was a bull, but this bull came and charged their car, hit the passenger side, impaled its horns into the door. My grandmother would have been pinned, but she had to flip into the back seat. And then my grandfather got out and had to wrestle this bull. Pull the horns out of the car. And it was all because the guy that was supposed to be watching that bull had stopped. He was watching a ball game somewhere, and he wasn't paying attention to the bull. And it was only my grandmother's corset that kept her from being impaled.
Oh, I always knew those things had a use, you know, armor.
Well, so that's a family lore, but I think that also made it into the paper somehow.
Well, the other one, and it's strange to read now because... he was attacked by an Indian near Lake Mille Lacs.
Uh-huh.
And I'm trying to imagine what was actually going on there.
Yeah, big grain of salt with that one, I think.
Yeah. But it made the papers. And of course, the other thing that I remember making the papers is he gave a long, impassioned speech about how it would really damage the womanhood of women if they were allowed to vote. And he did. Yeah. Seems like that was a big issue for it.
That I wouldn't know. Uh-huh. That was not somehow passed down matrilineally.
No, they didn't talk about that one.
No.
And, he seemed to play both sides of the saloon debate, depending on, and was accused at one point of just playing politics with it. Depending on which way the wind was blowing, he would either back the saloon keepers that were opening up on Sundays when they weren't supposed to. Or
oppose them.
Or oppose them.
Yeah. And that about brings another idea, which is there is a tunnel under my house. And I always wonder if it had something to do with prohibition. I don't know. But I discovered it accidentally when we were doing some work on the house. And it's about 2 feet wide, maybe 3 feet wide, 2 feet deep. I don't know where it comes. I don't know the entrances either way, but we found it as a hole through the... So who knows if that was part of Prohibition?
Could be. There were... I mean, the things I'm thinking of happened before Prohibition where there were a whole bunch of saloons down there by Crystal Lake. And the reason was because in Minneapolis, the saloons were closing on Sundays. So crowds would come out here to visit the saloons. The other thing that I remember was one of the first things that Robbinsdale did when Girling was the village president or the mayor had a saloon tax, and that allowed them to cut down the hill that led up from Crystal Lake so that ox carts and farmers taking things to market, vegetables and et cetera, to Minneapolis would have an easier time.
And that was going
down that hill.
That was part of the demise of Crystal Lake because they
dumped
on that stuff.
Then they took all, everything they took off that hill, they dumped into the lake. And
Pauling, I do remember another story. Well, and you've seen this too. My grandfather, had those cards that he would use for campaigning. And, his picture is on one side with a little writing. And then on the other side is a picture of a paved road. And it was like Rockford Road. And my grandfather had been instrumental in getting that road paved. And my mother would talk about how the farmers, anytime there was a big rainstorm, it would just turn into a sea of mud and there'd be huge potholes and the farmers couldn't get their goods to market. So I understand, but if there's anything more boring than a picture of a paved road, I'm not quite sure what it is.
Well, I like that picture because the road looks so narrow. It doesn't look like it's any bigger than a sidewalk. I mean, the cars must have had to pull over to get another one past it.
Yeah, but, sort of like in England. I mean,
and I also read that he helped bankroll that.
Heard on the podcast. I had not heard that before.
That's got to be that must have been a chunk of change, and it was concrete.
Yeah.
And,
she said he and his hired man, Nels, would sometimes go out and put gravel in the holes to, the potholes before it was fixed, before it was paved.
So. Yeah. The other thing I noticed about that house is it seems like the front door isn't facing any kind of road. At one point, was there a driveway that came that way?
The closest road was West Broadway. So that's about a block away almost.
Yeah.
And yeah, there was a long driveway that came across. And of course, the highway wasn't there when the house was built. So it was kind of a, you know, a curving driveway. And so that was the front door. My grandmother never liked the fact that from the front door, you could look straight into the bathroom. And she blamed the builders for that. She said that was a mistake. It wasn't supposed to be like that.
And did you tell me that the kitchen was supposed to be in the basement? Or
kitchen was supposed to be in the basement, which, I mean, it makes sense from the standpoint of in the summer, it would be cooler. But there are these windy, it's not a full spiral staircase, but kind of half spiral staircase. Those things are treacherous. Mm-hmm. And when my grandmother saw that, she's like, oh, no, it's not going to be in the basement. It's going to be up. So it's on the next story.
The windows that she enjoyed washing the windows.
Oh, yeah. My friend or couple was visiting my grandmother and my grandfather. And after they got the tour of the whole house, the woman said to my grandfather, you've built yourself a woman killer of a house here, Thomas Herbert.
Oh, but.
Because there's 110 panes of glass in the porch.
Yeah. So he was a state representative. And ran a couple times. I know that he died in an automobile accident.
Ironically.
Yeah. And he was a champion of transportation. And do you know, did he have other political ambitions or this was?
You know, I don't know. He was like in his 50, I think he was 58 when he died. It was in 1924. I have read other things where, you know, there was rumors that Gerling was going to go become the state waymaster at one point, which is really, it just blew me away when I saw that because my father, Leo J. Ambrose, he did become the state waymaster.
Okay.
And how strange is that to have that combination? But I never heard anything from my mom about him planning to do more than he had done.
So, and after Thomas passes away, your grandmother continues to live in the house?
Absolutely. I mean, my grandmother was in mourning for my grandfather until the day she died in 62. She was just like, everything was, it was kind of a shrine to Thomas Herbert. You know, we kept all of his stuff.
That's right. So you kept the furniture, the paintings, the desk, the congressional records. So
campaign materials.
I've got
a stack of campaign posters for the man who died in 1924. Yeah, she kept absolutely everything. And she dressed in black and purple for the rest of her life. I mean,
for the rest of her life.
Yeah. So that's about, what, 40 years, 38 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was devastated by that.
Did she stay, I mean, was she active in the in Robbinsdale, in the church, in the community?
Oh, definitely in the church. Yeah, she was a very, very staunch Catholic. She was in, actually, I was looking at this. I looked at her obituary, and it said that she was in, well, she was in the Dome Club, which I think was Republican, heavy-duty Republican. Mm-hmm. And she was in my great-grandmother was in the Foresters. Didn't you have something?
Oh,
like
the Woodsman.
Oh, the Woodman. Yeah. Now, this is the Catholic Order of Foresters.
Okay. Yeah.
And my great-grandmother was also in the Ancient Order of Hibernians, which is a big Irish thing. Because my great-grandmother also came from Ireland, and she moved into the house in the 20s. And so she lived there until she died in the 40s.
Yeah. Well, I knew Gerling was a booster, again, of the modern Woodsman of America's park that was up in 36th, and it was a camp basically for a couple summers, and he helped publish their own newspaper.
Yeah.
They put out whatever goings on.
Why we would have a Catholic Order of Foresters. I'm going to have to look into that. That seems so peculiar to me. But my grandmother was also active. I mean, I found an article where she was on a grand jury. And so she was politically engaged.
Yeah. Was Thomas Gerling Catholic too?
Well, he was buried from a Catholic church.
Okay.
So my feeling is he probably became Catholic when he married my grandmother, because that would have been a deal breaker. You know, I mean, you just would have to. So I never heard a lot about his, you know, his religious side, but I'm sure he just, because back in those days, you had to be. I mean, that was just like, if you're going to marry a non-Catholic, you're just out of here. Father Nolan wasn't around yet, but Father Gloom was. And yeah, they wouldn't have. Actually, I don't know if Father Boone was even known, because they got married in 1908, so I'm not sure.
No, he didn't come along until a little bit later, I know.
Later. Okay.
So we've got the Gerling house down there and the Gerling family on Crystal Lake. Tell me about the Ambrose family. When did they come to Robbinsdale?
1923. My father was born in 1914, so he lived several years in Minneapolis. And my grandfather, William Robert Ambrose, was married to Anna Anna Manning, because she actually had been married. She had been married before marrying my grandfather. Anyway, she had a thing that she had to live in a new apartment. She would not move into an apartment where anyone else had lived. And so they moved to all these new buildings in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And then finally they came out to Robbinsdale. And I'm not really sure what brought them to Robbinsdale, but they built the house on West Broadway in 1923. Actually, my grandfather built the house also next door.
Mm-hmm.
And they lived in that house first. And then he was building the big brick house. And then they moved into that one.
So the house next door, a little tiny one?
A little tiny one. And then there's the dental practice. So there's like the house. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they owned that for a long time and rented it out. And then eventually they sold it.
Now, the brick house, remember when it came up for sale a few years back and looking at that place and knowing that it had been just in one family
mm-hmm.
the entire time, which is, you know, I know so many families like this in Robbinsdale where a daughter inherits a house from a mother and lives in it. Or I know a guy who just bought his mother's house. And before that, his parents were divorced when he was a kid. Before that, he had bought his father's house.
Oh,
and then his daughter moved out. He decided he wanted to downsize. And his mom was ready to leave the house and go to an apartment or something. And he says, well, I'll buy her house now. So there's people that these houses just change hands.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got deep roots. I mean, we don't move around. Ambrosius and the Girlings, we're not, you know, travelers. We stick our roots down that
yeah.
way we are. So, my brother, unfortunately, lost the house in I forget what year it was. It was maybe 5-6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. And, but it had been in the family the whole time before then.
So the grandfather, Ambrose, builds the house.
Mm-hmm.
And then your father grew up in it.
Yep.
And where did it go from there?
My grandfather actually, he had a cottage on Clear Lake, which is kind of out by Litchfield in that mm-hmm. area. And he lived there for a long time, but then eventually he had a stroke, so he had to move back. And so he lived in the upstairs of the apartment, or the upstairs of the house. It was, there was a kitchen up there and a bathroom, and mm-hmm. so he lived up there. And then he died in 63. And then my brother, being the eldest, he moved up and had that apartment mm-hmm. thing. My father, all this time, my grandfather Ambrose was an alderman.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an alderman during the time that Robbinsdale went from village to city.
Right.
So you see him mentioned in, you know, a lot of newspaper articles about the funeral for mm-hmm. village.
Yep.
And he also... he was the chairman. He was the first chairman of the Goodwill Days.
Yeah.
So he was very active in Eagle, BFW, all that kind of stuff. He had been in the Spanish-American War. He was in Puerto Rico in the Spanish-American War. And I have a picture of him sitting outside his tent with his chicken.
The picture that we have of him here at the Historical Society is somehow he got a hold of a cannon from the Spanish-American War and brought it to town. And there was a big event where the Robbinsdale City Band played and they dedicated this cannon. And for years, some of our older members here at the Historical Society have been wondering what happened to the cannon. Where is the cannon? Where did it go?
Maybe it's in the tunnel under my house. I have no idea.
But
he was quite a mover and a shaker back in the day. I think he was very gregarious, and everybody called him Ambi. Because for Ambrose and then my father sort of followed in his footsteps, because there are some things about, you know, my grandfather was the chairman of something, and then eventually my father became the chairman of that same committee.
And so your grandfather served in the Spanish-American War. So did Captain Billy. Did he serve in World War One, too?
No, he didn't. And I don't know why. Maybe just because he was too old by then.
Yeah.
I know he did a lot of fundraising and food drives and all that kind of stuff. You see him a lot and all that. And of course, my grandfather Girling never fought in any military combat.
Right.
But he was a big hunter. He had his guns. He had mm-hmm. his hunting dogs. There's a number of stories. I don't know if you've seen a number of stories in newspapers about my grandfather and his dogs, and bulldog, and he had this and that. So, which is, you know, runs true in the family since I'm a big dog lover. Mm. And then my father, Leo, was in World War II, of course. And I have, mm-hmm. which will someday come to the Historical Society, the collection of every letter that he and my mother wrote to each other for the whole duration of his military service.
Yeah.
Handwritten, beautiful, beautiful script on both of their parts. It's really a delightful thing to read. My mother would always chastise me and talk about, you know, how my handwriting didn't compare to the Palmer method, because that's what they taught in school, the Palmer method. And we would have to, like, take these tests and then you get a medal. So you get a penmanship medal. So she was very proud of her handwriting.
Well, yeah, handwriting has changed a lot. When you read these letters and your mother's writing to your father in World War II, what does she say about Robbinsdale? Does she mention her?
She does, off and on. You know, she worked at the ration board during World War II. And so she would have stories about, you know, people coming in to get their coupons for their tires or their gasoline or whatever. And of course, again, there's my grandmother worked, my mother worked. I mean, there's a definite sort of unusual streak in that a lot of women didn't work at that time. And my grandmother wasn't happy that my mother decided to work at the ration board, but she did. And, you know, she'd write about radio shows that they listened to, you know, Fibber McGee and Molly was a big one. But, you know, when I read them, I wasn't as focused on Robbinsdale history. So I'll have to go back and see what I can pick out that's specifically Robbinsdale. I was kind of looking at, you know, the family things. You know, she's like, well, Fran moved in with us. And there was a lot of relatives that lived at our house off and on because of changing jobs and stuff. So it was almost like a little boarding house, which my great-grandmother ran a boarding house after my great-grandfather died. So it sort of runs in blood, I guess.
Did your family know the Nash family?
My mother would.
Ruby Nash.
She would speak about the Nashes, but I don't think they were really close. But yeah, I remember hearing she would always sit back and say, now there's a good old Robbinsdale name. And, you know, the Nashes and the Shumways and everybody, she just would rattle them all off. Yeah. She knew them all. And of course, Helen Blodgett was a big friend of hers. So yeah, and all those old names.
Yeah,
like that. Well, now you touch on what my aunt did, Betty Girling. She was in radio from when she went to college at the U.
And we have a whole bound copy of those too.
And she has her own archive at the University of Minnesota. She was head of the Minnesota School of the Air for many, many years. And she would have been an actress if she could have been, but she had a disability and that she just, you know, she could play character roles on stage, but she was never going to be the ingenue or anything like that. So she went into radio and she did quite well. And then, of course, my brother also went into radio.
Did Betty stay in Robbinsdale?
Yeah, she lived in the house. I moved in 79 when she died.
She died.
Yeah, she was there. After my grandmother died, it was my aunt Betty, and then my cousin Anna Mary, who was an airline stewardess for Northwest Airlines. And she was kind of a dippy lady. And I always joked that I think she flew before they pressurized the cabins.
Yeah.
She was a little. But yeah, so the two of them lived there. And then after Anna Mary got married, then it was just Betty.
Mm-hmm. And so your father comes back from World War II. And what life? And then what did he do from there?
He was working before he went into the army. He was working for the state. He wasn't the weighmaster, but he was a weigher for the state, which is weighing the railroad cars with the grain and all that kind of stuff. He's got some fascinating, in quotes, movies of barges being loaded with grain. Okay. You can imagine how riveting these films are. Mm-hmm. So he had worked for the state before he went there, and then he continued to work for the state. And eventually he became the state weighmaster. And so all this time he's working in the grain exchange building down in Minneapolis. And then towards the last 8-9 years of his life, he worked for the Public Utilities Commission in St. Paul.
Okay.
So yeah, he was always sort of in
government. Do you have a how your father met your mother story?
Well, I think they just met at Sacred Heart, you know, because they were both Catholics. They went to Sacred Heart. And
they only lived, you know.
That's true.
They could probably see each other's house, right?
Almost, yeah. But yeah, they were, I'm sure they were both interested in theater. So yeah, they were in a lot of plays together. My mother directed plays at Sacred Heart. My father acted in plays. So yeah, I'm sure that they just met. I don't have the story of it. When you mentioned the house, though, and seeing the house from each other, I wanted to say something because you'd mentioned Guaranty State Bank and the clock.
Right.
The turning, so Robin on one side, clock on the other. And I have to tell you, many times I sat and watched that clock rock back and forth in the wind.
Yeah.
Or it would be turning and then it would stop. So it was an exciting thing to live across the street from that hot. And then, of course, it would light up your room, and then you not light up your room. And then...
Oh, no. Yeah. And at some point, they built this park. They made their parking lot a beautiful eco park.
Yeah, it was a nice little park. It was lovely. You could, yeah, but mostly it was a parking lot, but with a little park next to it. Yeah.
Yeah. And for some reason, I have this memory of going down there and you know, they have these flags. They had three flagpoles, and one, they had the American flag, a Robbinsdale flag, and then they had the ecology flag. And
oh, wow.
So this was their eco parking
right?
lot. And I
right.
was sitting there.
Well, now you mentioned, I sound just like my mother. When you mentioned the bank, I remember the bank being built.
Mm-hmm.
Before the bank was there was the miniature golf course.
Right.
Which was a big draw for the teenagers at night, you know. And yep. they had like yellow lights around the outside.
Trampolines too, right?
Trampolines were down further. They were down like where the Legion parking lot in that little V of land kind of.
Right. Yep.
They were down there. And of course, my father, he had a friend whose son had been paralyzed jumping on a trampoline and landing wrong. So we weren't surprised when that place eventually closed down because of the liability involved. But
yeah,
I never went there, but
so many amusements right there.
The older kids would go to the trampoline. And of course, then there was the terrace. You'd go to the terrace. But
yeah.
I did go and play at the miniature golf. That was pretty exciting. And then the Alcan was still there at that time.
Okay, well.
I didn't go to the Alcan.
No.
I wasn't that wild a kid, yeah. But I remember it being there. It was just this huge building, just a big block of a building. Mm-hmm. And then when they tore down the miniature golf course and they were starting to build the bank, a duck came in and laid her eggs and built a nest and laid her eggs in the construction site. And it goes with the eco thing. They put up a sign that said maternity ward. And they actually, like, let her stay there, and they built, you know, the rest of it, which I thought was very sweet.
Thanks for listening. I'm Crystal Boyd. Robbinsdale Revisited is brought to you by the Robbinsdale Historical Society. Our little history museum is located at 4915 42nd Avenue North in the heart of Robbinsdale. We're open Fridays and Saturdays from 10 to 3. You can also visit us online at robbinsdale.org. You found this episode, so you know where to find the next one.
Bicycle into the city every Saturday to see our friends. In the bus back home, sitting hand in hand. When the evening ends, when the evening ends, when the evening ends, in Robbinsdale.
Our theme music is provided by Gabe Barnett and The Rounders.